org.
This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about bankruptcy law, and believe it or not, there are five myths about filing for bankruptcy. My guests are very good friends of this program, Leon Bayer and Michael O'Halloran. They're specialists in bankruptcy law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Mr. Bayer is a partner in the Los Angeles law firm of Bayer, Wishman, and Leota. Mr. Halloran's law office is in San Diego. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which certifies specialization in 11 fields of law: appellate law, bankruptcy law, criminal law, estate planning, trust and probate law, family law, franchise and distribution law, immigration and nationality law, taxation law, workers' compensation law, legal malpractice law, and admiralty and maritime law. Additional funding for the program is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar and the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar. Leon and Michael, great to have you on the program.
Oh, it's so nice to be here again.
Good evening, Chuck.
Yeah, let me do this, if you don't mind, with regard to these myths. If I make too much money, and this is to you, Leon, if you would, if I make too much money, do I not qualify for bankruptcy?
That is a particular myth. The bankruptcy laws were revised in 2005 in an attempt to exclude high-income earners from being able to file Chapter 7 bankruptcy, the traditional kind of a bankruptcy that will wipe out most debts. People who earn above median level of income.
What does that mean, median? What's median level of income?
Median is a real fancy word. It means there's as many people above that point on the graph as there are below it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little different than an average. But for the listeners, the easiest way to understand this is if you have income that is above average, then you are subjected to a means test before you are allowed to file a bankruptcy case.
Mm-hmm.
The means test for Chapter 7 is the gatekeeper. It's going to determine whether or not you as an individual are allowed to file. And what I encounter very frequently in my law practice, and I know Michael does as well, people have been calling around and speaking to lawyers on the phone. You know, they let their fingers do the walking. And rather than go see a lawyer in person and have a full consultation, they just want quick answers on the phone. And that's fine. I get that. It's okay to kind of get your toe in the water. But it doesn't really cut it in terms of finding out what your legal rights really are going to be, especially for the commencement of a bankruptcy case. So people are often told, if they call a bankruptcy mill, these are high-volume bankruptcy case producers. They do a lot of advertising, and their skills may not be particularly good. They often will just tell you, if you're an above-average incomer, they may just say, well, you don't qualify.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do Chapter 13 bankruptcy. Chapter 13 bankruptcy is a great remedy if that's what you need. And it's a terrible remedy if that's what you don't need, because Chapter 13 will put you into a long-term payment plan. If you're an above average income earner, you're going to be in a Chapter 13 case for 5 years making payments, whereas if a lawyer could have qualified you for Chapter 7, you could be in and out of the system in 3 months or so, and most, or maybe even all of your debts gone.
Leon, may I throw in a
question? The other thing, Chuck.
Yeah, go ahead, Michael, please.
Thank you, sorry.
Please, no. Go ahead, please.
There's a group of people who owe money who Leon and I don't even have to put through this financial test of their ability to pay, because they have debts of a type that Congress said the door swings wide open, people are welcome to file Chapter 7 and go the short route to discharging their debt. And in those instances, how much money you make becomes far less important But if someone doesn't sit with you and break it down and learn about you and give you a, you know, fully understand the situation, superficially it may sound like someone makes too much money to file, when that's absolutely false.
Is it fair for me to say that when you mentioned, Leon, the bankruptcy mills, is it fair to say that the people involved with the bankruptcy mills rarely are certified specialists in bankruptcy law by the Board of Legal Specialization, or am I going too far by saying that?
Chuck, it's very fair to say that. Unfortunately, in recessionary times, in the times of bad economies, there are a lot of lawyers that'll jump into bankruptcy practice because they think it's a great way to make a fast buck.
Mm-hmm.
And they think, well, you know, I just buy the computer software, and that does all the work for me, and I don't really have to know anything about this. It's just filling out forms, and that's just so untrue.
Yeah.
I get, and I'm sure Michael also gets, a steady stream of clients who have had bankruptcies filed at a bankruptcy mill, and the wrong decisions have been made from the get-go, such as putting someone into a Chapter 13 when they should be in a 7, putting you into a 7 when you should be in a 13, filing a case for you when you shouldn't have filed anything, failing to give you the right advice about assets you may have to give up. California law, in particular, is very generous about letting people keep a lot of valuable stuff when they file bankruptcy. But there's limits to it. And a good lawyer, any lawyer who's handling a bankruptcy case for you, ought to have enough experience and education in this field to know how to counsel you correctly so you know what to expect. You're not going into the case blindfolded. You know, people can deal with bad news when they're told in advance, like, this may happen, that may happen. People don't take it very well when bad things happen by complete surprise.
Well,
Michael and I know Michael, and our approach always is to educate clients so they know what to expect within reason. Nobody has a crystal ball. When I went to law school, they had already stopped giving out crystal balls upon graduation.
Well, that's when you were using the wagon train, wasn't it, Leon, when you went to law school?
Well, that's right. My crystal ball actually bounced off the back of the covered wagon.
I was in the wagon behind you. By the way, one of the things that I'd like everyone to know about these gentlemen, to become a certified specialist in any one of the 11 fields, including bankruptcy law, they had to go through an additional bar exam by the state bar and the many hurdles they had to overcome. So that's why they have the designation of certified specialist in bankruptcy law by the California Board of Legal Specialization. Now, let me throw something out. And for those of you who are listening to the live program, and we're doing this on Wednesday evening, February 3rd, in a couple of minutes I'll give the phone number that you can call in. It's a toll-free number, and talk with my guests. But let me throw this one, if you don't mind, Michael, to you. If I have a lot of old taxes that I have not paid, you know, I've been having so much fun with my money, and I haven't paid the government, I haven't paid the IRS. Am I in a situation that I cannot wipe out my old taxes going through bankruptcy?
That would be wrong, Chuck. The bankruptcy code provides a specific set of rules for the discharge of taxes, both state and federal. It's this is so widely misunderstood by accountants and by lots of lawyers who are always shocked when I tell them that under the right facts you can get out of your taxes. I mean, the kind of taxes, just to be clear, that you're not going to get out of will be recent taxes. The most common ones will be recent taxes that are unpaid and taxes where you didn't file your tax return.
Mm-hmm.
One needs to be sort of a good citizen and have done that. That's important to do.
Even if you don't pay it, you need to file your tax return. Is that the point?
That's right. And lastly would be payroll taxes. So those three categories are sticky and generally don't discharge. But income taxes, state or fed, where the returns have been filed, just no payment's been made,
By the way, let me just jump in there for the benefit of the listeners. If you owe taxes, you should still file the return, even if you don't have the money to pay the tax.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You can file a return when you owe money, and you don't have to attach a check then and there. And people all the time don't file returns because they know they owe money, and they feel, well, they think wrongly that they must pay the tax at the same time they file the return. It's critical for bankruptcy purposes, as Michael has just said, that if you're going to be eligible to discharge income taxes in a bankruptcy case, the returns must have been filed. If you never filed the returns, there's no discharge.
Well, isn't there a statute of limitations on taxes, or is there?
There is. Generally, well, so I'm not going to quote as to the state of California deadlines, and I think at some point, but I will give my general sense that in the past, there may not have been a statute of limitations. I believe there is one now, but it's lengthy. The federal, in all things tax, actually the federal government tends to be more straightforward and more direct, even though that's usually the larger tax. And with federal taxes, Chuck, generally the tax debt dies, the statute runs 10 years from the date of assessment of the tax. You know, and there are exceptions, but that's the normal rule for normal people. So after 10 years, if nothing else is done, and you will have filed, and there will have been an assessment, then the taxes will die. But that's
so
a long time to wait.
If you haven't filed, because and then there's no assessment, but let's say you realize that the people are listening to you now, Michael and Leon, and say, oh, gee, I should have filed, but I didn't, but they're telling me I should. What if they file now, for going back, let's say, to 2006? Is it too late for them to take advantage of wiping out these payroll taxes?
Income taxes?
I meant to say income taxes, yeah.
Sure. Leon, you want to play that?
Okay. I'll jump in there. You can discharge an income tax on a late filed return, provided that the return has been filed more than 2 years before the bankruptcy case.
Ah.
If I get any of this wrong, Michael, just jump in there and correct me. But the tax return must have been filed, the late return must be filed at least 2 years prior to the bankruptcy for a tax that was due at least 3 years prior to the bankruptcy,
mm-hmm.
and there has been no assessment made in the preceding 240 days.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't have to normally file a bankruptcy case on any given date. It's up to you and your attorney to figure out the most advantageous time to file. I have had people come to me who had been put into bankruptcy too early to discharge income taxes. And if they had just been given the right advice, which was wait a couple of months and then do it any time after such and such date, they could have successfully discharged taxes that they then have to carry with them. I've even seen cases where people have asked the bankruptcy court to let them dismiss a case because they filed too early. And all of the court decisions that I've seen reported have uniformly turned down that kind of request, saying, hey, look, Charlie Brown, you filed it when you filed it, and you're going to have to deal with the consequences. If you filed too early to be able to discharge a tax that could have been discharged had you waited another few weeks or another month, it's just too bad. And I actually had one person who came to me who had actually filed the bankruptcy 1 day too early.
Never a dull moment. Michael, you wanted to say something.
Thank you, Chuck. Yes, that I would just I agree with Leon. The area of late filed returns, which was the question you posed to us, has gotten very complicated and litigious lately because there is some new statutory language suggesting that a late return can't qualify for eligibility to be discharged. But it's not clear how the law, as I say, it's going up on appeal. Different parts of the country are producing different rulings, different courts are. So filing late is a sensitive area today, and honestly, in the next 2 or 3 years, we may see the Supreme Court handle that. Back to your example, if you're going to file, if you have some years that you didn't file for, the one benefit of filing is that you will start running the 10-year statute of limitations.
That was what I was hoping you'd say. I want to take a brief pause, if you would. Everybody, if you have some questions for my guests, they said they would like to have calls from you during a portion of the first half hour. Second half hour, of course, is another half hour where you will be able to talk with them. But you can call in now if you like. Toll free, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Penny. We're doing a program on bankruptcy law and the five myths about filing for bankruptcy. My guests are certified specialists in bankruptcy law by the California Board of Legal Specialization. They are Michael O'Halloran and Leon Baer. Mr. Baer's office is in Los Angeles. Mr. Halloran's office is in San Diego. This program is also funded, not this particular one, but funding for Your Legal Rights is also made available by the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. So let me do this. We've got people who want to talk to you very quickly. Let me throw out one more question, if you don't mind, to you. If I have very bad credit, and I'm very concerned about filing for bankruptcy, but if I do, I'll never have good credit again. Isn't that correct, Leon?
No, that is one of the biggest myths of all, and there's really so many more myths than just five. We'll never cover them all, so we tried to focus on just five big ones. People who file a bankruptcy case generally already have wrecked their credit. If you have been letting your credit card debts go delinquent, you've gone delinquent on your house, your mortgage, your credit's already wrecked. Bankruptcy's not going to make it any worse. Bankruptcy may actually improve your credit. You'd be surprised. Somebody who files a bankruptcy case obtains a bankruptcy discharge. They had absolutely miserable credit before they filed bankruptcy. A year after the bankruptcy, their credit score is going to probably have improved significantly, especially if they have some kind of installment debt, like a car loan, that perhaps they reaffirm and can continue to make all their payments, make timely payments. You start to build up good credit reputation again. Bankruptcy is definitely not the end of the road for people in terms of obtaining new credit. There may be a pause, and maybe there should be a pause, but bankruptcy will give you a fresh start. It's what the law intends for you to experience. It's a fresh start.
Well, let's take a call.
You're going to find lenders, car dealers will actually approach you. My clients, I'm sure Michael has the same experience. They're constantly being approached when they get their bankruptcy discharge saying, you know, Mr. Jones, wouldn't you like to buy a new car? Come on down to our dealership here, and we congratulate you on getting your bankruptcy, and if you need a new car, we can get it for you.
Let's just take a call at this point, because this gentleman has been waiting. Brett, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Good evening.
Hi.
I'm speaking out of ignorance and not judgment, but I'm wondering if you could talk about the wisdom of the legislation that allows people who do have good incomes to allow them to file bankruptcy. I just don't understand why they should be forgiven their debts.
Good question, Brett. Thank you very much. That is a good one. It's an issue that involves morals, I think. Brett, take your answer on the air. Did you gentlemen hear what Brett had to say?
Yeah, I did. I'd love to respond to what Brett said.
Please do.
It's really more of a point of view that he has, I think, than a question, but it is a good question. The bankruptcy law is designed for economic purposes. It suits the benefit of society at large to let people have relief from burdensome debt that they cannot pay. Someone may have a very high income, but they may also have very high debts that they can never hope to repay. Most people that we encounter in bankruptcy practice did not go out and willy-nilly run up their debts irresponsibly. Most people who file a bankruptcy case are in that situation, regardless of what their income happens to be. They're in the situation because they've gone through a divorce, they've had a serious illness and a long period of disability that interfered with their income earning, or they've lost their job and had a long period of unemployment. Those are the reasons most people are going to wind up in a bankruptcy case. And even if they happen to be high income earning, it benefits society to let that person have relief from debts so that they can go on working, being productive, paying taxes, and be a consumer of the goods and services that are produced by other people in the economy.
Michael, do you have some comments about this?
We have debtors' prisons. We got rid of them. I think the last debtors' prison, Chuck, you got released, I think, back in 1850.
Yeah, right? I did, and I'm feeling a lot better about it, actually,
yeah.
Leon.
We tried that experiment of debtors' prisons, and the only thing that gets accomplished is the rest of the community then has to pay for the incarceration of someone who can't pay their debts.
Good point.
But it doesn't get the debt paid,
yeah.
And it just puts more of a financial burden on the community to pick up the tab for incarcerating someone. So bankruptcy and indebtedness ceased to be a crime more than 150 years ago.
Michael, any comments from you before we go on?
Sure, 2 points. One, no one ever comes into my office or Leon's office who can pay their bills. So you don't have to worry that there are rascals out there running up debt and then merrily coming to us.
That's for sure, and they can barely pay us, as a matter of fact.
Very often. And then number two, Chuck, just so the audience understands, our right to, the Second Amendment, our right to bear arms, and the First Amendment, and our right to free speech, those were added 10 years after the Constitution was written, right, in the founding of our country. In the Constitution, before they put in the right to bear arms, the founders put in, there'll be a bankruptcy law in the United States. It's in the Constitution. It's been there from day one, the Bill of Rights and all those amendments that came 10 years later, were embroidered onto the Constitution, but it's a fundamental point on which our country was actually established.
That's
completely correct. And the bankruptcy clause in the Constitution is in the very first paragraph of the Constitution. That's how important it was to the founding fathers.
Wow, the founding fathers must have been in debt. Let me go on.
Well, you know what? That long revolutionary
war. That's another show.
Yeah, but it did. It left the founding fathers, many of them, financially insolvent and bankrupt.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. Let me throw out one more question before we end the statewide version of the program, which is the first half hour, which is recorded. It is then sent out by the station to about 15 other stations, most of which are in California, and the first half hour airs next week in those stations. But here's the question I have for you. Should I, with my prized possessions, if I'm thinking of bankruptcy, should I transfer all of my prized possessions, my classic Cadillac and whatever else I have, to my family members so I can go into bankruptcy court and say I don't have these assets? Let me throw this to you, Michael.
Chuck, that's a horrific idea for a lot of reasons, starting that it's grossly unfair. If we do have bankruptcy law, we have an opportunity to escape our debts. There may be some price that we pay. We may have to surrender assets, although that's not inevitable. This area of debtor-creditor law, honest to God, is much like it's been for 400 years. The guy next door to William Shakespeare, who ran out of money, thought, I'll move. No, wait, I'll change my name. No, I'll give everything to Mom, No, no. I'll change the name of the door. I mean, the moves that people think of that are common are very well known, and there are already statutes out there to say if you do these things, we think we know what you're thinking. So you make things worse by without good counsel trying to set up your bankruptcy yourself.
Is that, for example, with the examples you've just given, is that getting into the area of possible criminal prosecution by the federal government for doing these kinds of things?
It's a possibility. Mm-hmm. If it is sort of, you mean, there's, you know, we joke about there being a zone called criminally stupid. I mean, if you're just stupid,
but
you don't hide the fact that you did these things, then usually they'll be undone and you'll be patted on the head and let go your way.
Mm-hmm.
If you take aggressive actions and then amplify them or worsen them by concealing them, the FBI, you know, is ever present, and they got plenty to do. So they're not going to come after straight up people and honest cases. It's not going to happen. But if one is violating the law, it can get criminal attention. Yeah.
Well, what I want to do now is we're gonna end the half hour in just a moment. I want to let all of you know, though, if you're looking for a certified specialist in any one of the specialties by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the statewide number is 415-538-2100, 415-538-2100. Or you can go to the website www.calbar.ca.gov. And go to the left side of the screen, the upper part, for legal specialists. All right, everybody, this is Your Legal Rights. I want to invite you, if you have questions for my guests, I want to invite you to call in. It's 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Also, I want to let you know, by the way, that in 2 weeks, on Wednesday evening, February 17th, we are going to have our annual Call a CPA night. We'll have a number of CPAs here at the station, KALW in San Francisco. Of course, ready, willing, and able to try to give you answers to your questions about federal tax law. You might want to jot down the number if you have a question. No obligation on your part. This will be Call a CPA night. Will be off the air while I'm doing the live program. And that number is an 800 number, 800-525-9917, 800-525-9917. That's for Call a CPA night off the air while I'm doing the live program on the air, where we will be talking about help to you in preparing your 2015 tax return. And that number on the air is just like the one we're having tonight, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. We are doing this program tonight on Wednesday, February 3rd, so if you're listening to it live, please join us with your questions, your comments, etc. 866-798-8255. Let me do this. Let me let the listeners know, in case any of you have tuned in a little bit late, my guests are longtime, very great friends of this program. Both of them are specialists in bankruptcy law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. One of them is in San Diego. That's Michael O'Halloran. That's his law office down there in San Diego. The other is Leon Bayer, whose office is in Los Angeles. As you may know, if you listen to this program regularly, Leon has been incredibly generous with his time for several years now. When we've done a regular Call a Lawyer night on a, let's say, the fourth Wednesday of the month, which we usually do, Leon will take calls on his 800 number the next morning, Thursday morning, usually from 8 to noon. So he's been an incredibly generous person with his time. So let me do this. I want to encourage those of you out there, join us with your number, with your phone calls, 866-798-8255, and we have Charles. Welcome to the program.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi.
So can you discharge child support?
Can you discharge child support? Now, that's really Very interesting. I've never heard that one before. Do you want to ask Charles any questions, or should he turn his radio back up, gentlemen?
I think we could probably handle it without learning anything more.
Yeah, Charles, turn your radio back up for the response, will you? And thank you very much for the question. There are some parents who obviously have been ordered by the court to pay child support. The other parent has at least 50% of the custody of the child, maybe sometimes 100%. What's the answer to that one?
There's virtually nothing that bankruptcy is going to do for you in terms of discharging support. Actually, there is nothing it's going to do for you in terms of discharging family support, child support, alimony. If you owe arrearages on child support and you've got your wages garnished, it might be advantageous to consider going into a Chapter 13 bankruptcy. You could have up to 5 years to pay back the arrearages that you owe. The bankruptcy will not excuse you from paying part of it. You have to still pay what you owe. You'll also still be responsible to pay the interest that accrues on that support debt. The bankruptcy law is intended to it's intended to treat debts with a strong moral obligation different than the ordinary consumer debt or commercial debt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And debts that have a very strong importance to society, such as to take care of your dependents, is given an importance in the bankruptcy code that sets it apart from other ordinary debts. And like student loans, and often with taxes, you can't discharge it.
Yeah. Again, what we're talking about, this is federal law. The bankruptcy law is federal law. So this applies throughout all of the United States. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. The United States and all of its territories.
Yeah. So you know, for Charles, let me ask you this question in light of what Charles has called in on. Obviously, sounds like he's probably behind on child support. If someone wants to make, generally speaking, and not everyone does the same thing, but if someone has a question about bankruptcy and, let's say, goes to the Board of Legal Specialization, either the phone number, calls the phone number, or goes to the website and finds out who in their city is a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, is there, for an initial consultation, is there a charge, or generally speaking, or not?
You know, it's up to each lawyer. I think what Charles and all the other listeners should know, it's going to take one thing away from the program tonight, it's this. Most consumer bankruptcy lawyers will give you a free consultation.
Ah, okay.
We know you're broke. We know you don't want to spend money unnecessarily on something that may not do you any good. We get that. Come see us. So many of us do not charge anything for a consultation. You can find out your legal rights without spending anything. The one thing we do ask of people is, don't expect an in-depth consultation on the telephone.
Okay.
Go see a lawyer in person.
Yeah, okay.
And there's one other concept I want to get across, and that is, there's no such thing as a dumb question here. We're talking about bankruptcy myths and so forth, and we're saying, oh my God, you should never do this, you should never do that. But you know what? Every one of you who is listening, you have your own unique problems. Don't be afraid to ask any question to a lawyer that you speak with.
And just as you would do with a doctor, there's and people don't do that with us, you know, get a second opinion if it seems odd or because of course people who are listening are proactive and 99% of them, Chuck, today will do a little internet research. You know, 20 years ago if someone came in and they threw out a bankruptcy term, it made me suspicious and probably Leon, because you'd say, oh, you've been all around town, you've learned the vocabulary, you know, what are you about? But today it's completely different.
Sure.
You know, people go online and look stuff up, And that's terrific. And there are any number of good sources. So if someone tells you something you read online, I'm going to credit it to a good source, you know, a good legitimate source, and the Lord tells you that's not right, maybe you keep looking.
Now, be a good consumer. Do some work. Be willing to do some research yourself to make sure that you're beginning to understand what road you need to take. Before we take our next call, let me give the toll-free number again, 866-798-8255 for your legal rights. We're talking about bankruptcy. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours, 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. Call your own during normal business hours. Let them know what the problem is. They'll do their best to try to find someone for you who has experience in the area and set you up for a half an hour consultation. With minor exception in California, for a half an hour consultation through the lawyer referral service, you'll pay somewhere between $25 to $35 for that half hour. That's face-to-face with a lawyer. That money does not go to the lawyer. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep that service going, which is a great public service. Okay, we've got Karen. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks, guys. I'm glad you're out there doing that great work. I have a question. Can a student loan be discharged after 10 years?
After how many years?
10 years.
After 10 years. Hey, there we are. Okay.
I'll take my answer off the air.
Now, how long has it been since you incurred your debts? Is it 10 years?
At least.
Ooh, okay. All right. Very good.
Oh,
Karen, good for you.
That old.
You sound awful young, Karen. I think you're pulling a fast one on us, but in any event, turn your radio back up. What about this? If the student debt is 10 years old and you haven't paid it back, can you discharge it?
There's no 10-year rule. I think Karen probably heard us talking about the statute of limitations on income tax collection.
Yes.
Federal income tax. There's no such rule anymore in bankruptcy. There used to be when the bankruptcy code was enacted on November the 6th of 1979.
Wow.
There was a provision saying that student loans that had been in a repayable status for at least 5 years were dischargeable in bankruptcy. Mm. How do you like that?
Yeah, I remember you were on the program at one point and we talked about that, Leon.
Yes, I think it was may have been in the last century.
Yeah, go ahead.
But that has been removed, and now student loans are dischargeable only if the bankruptcy court makes an extraordinary determination in your case that the repayment of the debt would be an undue hardship on you or any of your dependents.
Yeah.
Everybody who has student loan payments feels it's a hardship.
Yeah.
But the courts don't consider it an undue hardship if it means you have to drive an older car instead of a new car.
Give us an example.
You don't have money to go to Starbucks twice.
Give us an example of what an undue hardship might be.
The classic case for getting a bankruptcy court and to forgive your student loan debt, and Chuck, so people understand, It's a long, tortured road in bankruptcy to be relieved because you have to both file the case, proceed through the case, which is usually enough to discharge honest, dischargeable debts. But student loan debt is not that way. You have to then sue your lender in the case, bring a lawsuit, and which then brings the judge into the fight, and ask the judge to forgive you the debt because you're not going to be it will be a hardship for you. And the classic example: somebody on usually some medical or physical problem, mm-hmm. fixed income, seemingly for the rest of their life, which barely will pay their living expenses, leaving no money for student loan debt, and hence, in that kind of case, there's some good likelihood, although it's very different judge to judge, but there's some strong possibility that the court would find it was a hardship because you couldn't maintain a minimum standard of living.
Let me throw this
Michael
out.
Michael is exactly correct on that, and these cases are very difficult because the student loan lenders fight them tooth and nail,
mm-hmm.
and they don't want to set precedents of rolling over and making it easy for people to discharge these. So you've got to be prepared for a very aggressive court fight.
And many times, Leon, if I may...
It's nearly impossible to do this on your own without an attorney. And unfortunately, attorney fees, even if the lawyer will do the case for you, perhaps on a discount out of sympathy, the attorney fees can get very high.
Can I throw something out to you? Let me throw something.
$10,000 in attorney fees, maybe even $15,000 to get all the way through trial on one of these cases.
Leon, let me interrupt for a moment, Leon. Is this the type of situation, in light of what Karen has brought up, that one might want to consider filing a Chapter 13?
A 13 would be interesting in this sense. There's nothing in Chapter 13 that makes it easier to discharge your student loans.
Well, I'm just talking about you postpone it. You
could
can
be used to rehabilitate a loan that's in a longstanding default and where the lender won't work with you and put you back on a reasonable payment track.
I see.
So Chapter 13 can be used to cure the default on your loan.
Mm-hmm.
It may also relieve you from making student loan payments maybe for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of that 5 years, the five-year duration of a Chapter 13 case, your student loans are not going to be discharged unless you go through this onerous, difficult process that Michael has described of litigating to seek the undue hardship discharge.
Mm-hmm.
But a Chapter 13 can give you a long breathing spell, and we've done a number of cases for people who just needed that breathing time. They didn't know what they're going to do 5 years later when the Chapter 13 is over with, but as things were presently in that person's life, they needed this kind of a respite.
All right, let me just interrupt with something here. I want all of you to know, wherever you may be in the United States, since we are not only live in California, live on the Internet at www.klw.org, but we're also live now on the National Public Radio satellite. If you are listening to this program, the live program on Wednesday, February 17th, at California time, 7 p.m., we are having our yearly Call a CPA night, where there will be several CPAs here in the conference room at KLW in San Francisco who will talk with you off the air while I'm doing the live program, talk with you between 7 to 8 p.m. Pacific time. That number, if you're interested for Call a Lawyer night on February 17th, is 800-525-9917, 800-525-9917. On the program that evening, I will have David Hellman, who's a certified specialist in taxation law, and we'll talk about giving you some help in preparing your 2015 tax return. And again, for the on-air program, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And I want to thank Fred for being so patient. Fred, you're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights. Fred, are you there? Hello? I guess we've lost Fred. Sorry, Fred. Do we have Tony?
This is Tony.
Oh, Tony, hi. Welcome to Your Legal Rights. You're on the air, Tony.
Thank you, sir. I have a question about the callback clause. I had to file Chapter 7 bankruptcy because of the Great Recession in 2009, and then I got discharged. At the time, my house was underwater, but since then, you know, the economy has improved, and I was able to sell my property and buy a different one. So my bankruptcy was discharged, Chapter 7, in 2010. Can the creditors come back and ask for the money back?
I'm sorry, what money are you talking about, Tony? Don't go into great detail, but what money?
Chuck, I understand the question.
Okay, all right, go
I'm
ahead.
Sure Michael does too. Tony,
go ahead.
You've asked a wonderful question. You're afraid that even though your bankruptcy was granted, that now that your home has become valuable, you've developed equity again in your home, you're worried that maybe the court or the creditors are going to come back and say, okay, now you can afford to pay all those old bills.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to worry about that. A bankruptcy case is a dividing line in your financial life. And any wealth or assets that you're able to develop in the future are yours. Whatever you can accumulate from your own hard work or just because you made your house payments when your house was underwater, you kept the house, and now it's gone up in value, it's yours.
Oh,
because your discharge was granted, your case was closed, and the assets that the court allowed you to keep at that time when your case was closed are now yours forever.
Oh, okay. So I can sleep peacefully at night.
You have a better
Tony. We don't want you to go to sleep until after 8 p.m.
Yeah, yeah. Stay awake, Tony, for the next about 13 minutes until we're finished with the program. Okay.
Oh, I listen to this program religiously.
Okay.
Thank you so much, gentlemen.
Great, Tony. Great.
Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year to you, and thank you very much for calling.
Thanks, Chuck. Okay.
You're welcome, Tony. Thank you for calling. Our toll-free number, 866-798-8255. Our friends, the certified specialists in bankruptcy law, Leon Baer and Michael O'Halloran, will be on the air with us for about another 10 minutes. So if you do have a question or a comment or a concern, please don't wait for 7 or 8 minutes because it'll be too late. So it's 866-798-8255. You know, here's what I'd like you to talk a little bit about. You touched on it briefly, but I mean, you know, let's face it. If people if people are having trouble paying bills, lawyers are expensive. Why can't I just do my own bankruptcy?
Well, I guess you've given it a lot of thought, haven't you?
I have a lot of thought. Yeah,
bankruptcy is extremely complicated. I think 25 years ago, 30 years ago, it was still tough.
I should have done it then, huh?
We're able to grind it out without making too many mistakes or making serious mistakes. And a lot of people were able to successfully file a bankruptcy case on their own and save the cost of a lawyer. And it just isn't that way anymore. The bankruptcy paperwork is so complex that even lawyers who don't deal with bankruptcy on a regular basis are flummoxed by the paperwork.
Mm.
You just can't sit down at your kitchen table anymore and do your own bankruptcy case without the danger of committing serious, terrible mistakes that will affect your case and affect your financial future. Some of these mistakes can be corrected fairly easily with a simple amendment if you make them, and some of these mistakes can actually be fatal to the case, may cause you to lose assets that could have been saved, cause you to not be granted a discharge when you could have had a discharge. So it just isn't to do it yourself or anymore. If you have significant debt, the cost of a lawyer is going to be minuscule compared to the amount of debt you can discharge in a bankruptcy.
And as well, the peace of mind that you have, that you pay somebody to come in and oversee the work for you, who's familiar with the process, is terrific. When Leon and I see people at the court, and God love them for trying to work it through, but you know, my clients are with me at court and they're not happy, but their stress levels are a tenth of what it is for the people trying to figure it out on their own.
Bankruptcy is a highly emotional period in anybody's life, and just the comfort of having a lawyer that you can call or you can email and get your questions answered. And you know, when you pick a lawyer, I wanted to go into this a little earlier. When you pick a lawyer and you go visit the lawyer in the office, if you don't have a good feeling about the lawyer, walk out of there.
Yeah.
Don't hire someone that you don't like. You're the boss. You're paying the lawyer. That lawyer's going to work for you. And if
you hire
someone that talks down to you, won't answer your questions, treats you cavalierly, don't hire such a person. Walk out and find someone else.
That's very good advice, Leon. And although both of you are specialists in bankruptcy law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization, I don't know what's going on in other states. Are there, in many of the other states, are there specialties in bankruptcy law so that people, if they need to go into bankruptcy, people who are listening to this program in other states, can they, if they do some Googling or research, can they find specialists in bankruptcy law as opposed to someone who may be really a personal injury attorney or family law attorney to do their bankruptcy? Do you have any idea, are there specialties in bankruptcy law in other states in the United States?
Well, Chuck, there's a national resource. I'm actually certified by that group too, just because I'm nerdy enough to want to get a couple more pins to wear on my lapel.
Ooh, that must look pretty good. Yeah.
I thought so, Mike.
What is the national organization?
So there's a wonder, and I use it when I refer people out of state. It's the American Board of Certification. That is, even though it sounds generic, it's a bankruptcy only group that in many ways is very parallel to in structure and evaluation of bankruptcy lawyers to determine who's an expert, who's got the knowledge, who's got the experience, and by the way, for the audience, you can only get to be in the state group or the American Board, the certification group, if your colleagues and your opponents in your city will vouch for your ethical standards and capability. So it's hard to sell baloney on this one. People really have to have the goods, and not just one recommendation. I think in the American Board, I think we ask for 6 or 7. So, Chuck, the American Board of Certification has a website.
Yes.
You can sort it by state, and then you can say you can go big or little bankruptcy or consumer or business, and the people on there are very good. In addition, there are many states, but not all. In fact, I don't even know if there's a majority of states that where the state authorizes or licenses.
Mm-hmm.
It's not certified, that's
yeah,
the verb.
Yeah.
People as specialists. I know they do in Florida, and I'd be guessing to say otherwise. So it's possible the states will, but I do have to stand up for the ABC, because that's very, very skilled, competent people there.
So if someone Googles American Board of Certification, they will be able to find out what the website is and be able to determine whether or not through the American Board of Certification they can find someone who's been certified by the American Board of Certification as a bankruptcy attorney in that state. Is that essentially correct?
That's absolutely right. You know, they need to become a sponsor of this program, don't they?
Well, I'd like to have them as a sponsor of this program. in terms of having providing great information to people throughout the United States, along with the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which is one of the funders of this program. We have about 2.5 minutes left, and what I'd like to do is take one more call, but I'd like to let all of you know, for certainly all of you in California, the Board of Legal Specialization number, if you're looking for a certified specialist in California, that's their 11 specialties, is 415-538-2100. If you go to the website, it's www.calbar.ca.gov. Go to the left side of the screen for legal specialists. Click that on, and for your geographic location in California, you'll find out who the certified specialists are that you're looking for. All right, we have about 1 minute left, and Marcia, are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead. You're going to have to be very succinct if you would.
I had always thought that each state varied very widely in the type of items that were listed to, you know, not be counted in bankruptcy. Is that true, or has that now become uniform?
Marcia, that is exactly true. The bankruptcy law, while the discharge provisions and the rules and regulations of administering a bankruptcy estate will be the same in every state because it's done in federal court, the federal bankruptcy law yields to the states and lets each state decide what people in that state are going to be allowed to keep as their exempt property if they file a bankruptcy.
Usually it's a home, is it not?
Yeah, usually, you know, and it varies.
Or at least some portion of the equity in the home.
That's right.
Yeah.
Household goods, how much equity in a car you can have. One great thing that is uniform now is retirement accounts are almost generally universally protected.
That's great to hear. That's really great to hear. Marcia, did that help you? Are you still there?
I just wonder if it's advantageous sometimes to decide what state you might want to
move to, huh? Oh, hey, you're good.
Michael, I bet you could answer
Michael, go ahead on that one.
Sure. Marcia, if you actually check YouTube, you'll find 60 Minutes, the TV show on Sunday.
We have a few seconds only.
In any number of programs about rich people who shifted states and then filed the bankruptcy. However, those are old programs because today it's much more difficult to establish legitimate residency in a new state and be able to use that state's rules to protect your assets.
We have run out of time. I'm sorry to tell you that. I want to thank you both very much. I'm sorry, Marcia, we ran out of time, actually. Leon Baer and Michael O'Halloran, specialists in bankruptcy law certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Been great to have you both on the program. We needed more time, but we certainly didn't have it. By the way, everybody, next week we're going to do a special program on Valentine's Day, Prevention of Domestic Violence. My guest will be B.J. Fathom, specialist in California family law. Alicia Ankers, family law trial advocate in North Dakota and Minnesota. Rosanna Figueroa, liaison for the Domestic Violence Response Team of La Casa de las Madres. And Judge Eugene Hyman, retired of the Superior Court of California. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McClain. Funding for this program has been made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Additional funding for the program is made possible by the California Applicants Attorneys Association, the San Mateo County Bar Association, and by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Again, I want to enlighten you. We will do on February 17th that evening, our call a CPA night. I hope you can join us starting at 7 p.m. California time. Thank you for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, and please join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.